show. Thank you for joining us today and joining us now. It's a pleasure to welcome Sean Vidge. He is the author of a new book, Moral Fiber, Awakening Corporate Consciousness. Moral Fiber by Sean Vidge, and that's spelled V-I-J. And I should also mention there is a foreword to the book by the Dalai Lama. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Sinclair. I appreciate the opportunity.
You know, this is a book that we don't see very much of when it comes to business books. And we hear a lot about analysis of how to make profits. We see a lot about logistics. We see a lot of things that analyze what went wrong with corporations or with the economy or with leaders in the economy. But we don't talk much about how to create corporate consciousness. And you got right to it very early in the book. There is a phrase that we have all heard. It's not personal, it's just business. Chilling phrase. Explain how.
Yeah.
Explain a little bit of the story and why that was one of the first things that you mentioned in the book.
Sure. Now, I mean, it's a phrase that we, like you say, commonly use. And it's a phrase that I used, I would have to say, you know, 20 plus years of my career. And it's a way to it's a way to categorize our thinking, right? And it's a way what I would call, it's the first step of what we get into ethical fading, distancing yourself from who you really are. And what I mean by that is, you know, so we categorize it. We say everything, when I talk about it in the book, everything is personal. Let's be really, you know, authentic about it. Everything is personal. And that's just a way of distancing ourselves. What happened personally for me in that was where I started living by that mantra was when I ended up, I was at a particular role and I ended up getting laid off and or let go because I had found something that was happening unethically at work and I was causing some stir, if you will. They took it as a stir, but it was just in pure innocence where I found it some unethical movements happening in the workplace and I was told to come into the office and they, you know, I was young starting out my career. And they told me exactly that. You know, my manager said, she said to me, it's just business. It's not personal. And okay, so I have a baby on the way. I have a family, like most people, like most of your audience. I mean, everybody's going through a life situation. It is personal. And if we live that way, you know, then we start thinking that way. And so I, you know, after the course of my career and after having met the Dalai Lama and working with his team, and it just opened a whole different lens and different perspective. And I started to see leaders who actually think it's personal and at all times. And those were the leaders I started gravitating to.
Mm. You talk about how there's a ethical fading or a psychic numbness that comes over people in the workplace sometimes. We become inured to this idea of it's not personal, it's just business, and we tend to think that that is okay. The result of that kind of thinking, though, can be truly very toxic.
Yes. You're starting to see a lot of the psychic numbing and ethical fading. Let's just take a company that we all know, right? And they talk it in ethics and business ethics, the slippery slope. And Enron, for example. And you know, mm-hmm. it's what I would call you can put a frog in boiling water and you know it's toxic. But when you put the frog in the water and it starts to boil, you know, the whole cliche that you start to lose yourself and you end up, I would say, normalizing a behavior. And that's what it really means. At the end of the day. And so we end up normalizing this behavior. I mean, look at the country today, right? I mean, it's so divisive and we're starting to normalize it. And I don't want to, you know, take it off the grid there, but it's the same type of approach. And we start to condition our thinking that way and we forget to lose what we really are about. And we end up losing ourselves. And I go through that in the book as well.
Yeah, and a couple of very important points there. I mean, we are, I think, becoming inured to a lot of wrongdoing and allowing a lack of moral fiber to enter in. But at the same time, sometimes we do see companies and corporate leaders stand up. And one example is, for example, after Charlottesville, there were some companies that took a stand there and said, you know, that's wrong. That's just not right. We're not going to support that.
Yeah. No, I admired that, you know, and, you know, I always go back to, I mean, there's a lot of companies, I mean, Howard Schultz, I mean, definitely. And it's, I think what companies are realizing, what I'm seeing more and more today is that companies are getting more global than ever, right? It's just a smaller world, you know, and there's, and in that, in those corporations, you know, having worked in a lot of these companies, there's, you know, there's a diverse set of employees, a diverse set of customers and communities, and companies that realize that, you know, they realize that, you know, the community is just not another stakeholder in business. It's their purpose of existence. And so that mindset, those are the companies that I've noticed are much more sustainable, and they're able to adapt with the change and the evolving change and are more resilient. And so with that comes from the leadership as well. And that's where when you saw Google, and that's where when you saw Microsoft and Satya, and you saw, you know, you see these folks get up and take a stand because they're standing up for their employees. They're standing up. I mean, Howard Schultz used the word moral fiber to his teams. I'm from the Seattle area, and, you know, I've known a lot of people that work at Starbucks, and it was just amazing to see. They're taking that position because they have a respect and an understanding that it's a smaller world today. And, you know, just standing up for the right things. And you're going to, I think we're going to see more of that. I think we're going to see much more of that. And especially with the millennials and what they gravitate to. And, you know, yes.
Your meeting with the Dalai Lama was a life-changing event for you, it seems. How is it that you came into contact with the Dalai Lama? Most of us will never meet him, but something must have actually propelled you to that meeting.
Yeah, no, it was definitely, it was in January 2014 when I first met him. Oh no, February 2014. It was in January where I would say everything hit me at once, Sinclair, on a personal level. So my health was, I mean, we all go through these things. I mean, mine just happened to happen all at once. I was going through some really strong health concerns. Had excessive weight. I had, potential heart problems. I was just going through a lot of stress. I was in a very stressful, toxic job. My marriage was breaking down. I was distancing myself from, you know, it was just one level of toxicity building off the other, right? And we've all kind of, I mean, you know, you've been in those rooms where it's just negative when you walk out and you feel like filth, and it's just a negative environment. And that was what was happening both inside and outside in my body. And I was going through a really tough time, and I was just mentally, what am I doing? Right. I'm close to, you know, I'm in my mid 40s. This is not right. I'm not happy. I didn't feel happy, and I felt depressed, and it was just going through a big crisis. And, I basically just lost myself. And I remember I was panicking and I had everything. I have everything. I have a house, I have a beautiful home, beautiful cars. I have everything that I could ever dream of. And I was just feeling empty inside, and I felt like I had lost myself. And just, I started walking around the house, and I was looking for something. I was in seek of something, and I didn't know what. And I opened this drawer in the guest bedroom. Seriously, I opened this drawer, and I find this little pocketbook on the Dalai Lama. And the whole time I was feeling down and depressed, but very angry too at myself. And there was so much anger in me. And I, you know, people could tell at work I was very angry. It was not good. And so I opened this pocketbook, and the first thing I read is how having compassion builds your inner strength. And I just, it just, it, I was, I never knew the Dalai Lama. I'm not a religious person. I'm not, I mean, I'm a spiritual person, but I was never like, I'm not an Orthodox. And I was like, okay, you know, this is interesting. And I started opening it. The irony was I bought that book out of a whim, like maybe 8 years ago or prior to that. And I started reading more about it. And, I went to Barnes & Noble the next day, and I just sat there all day and just started reading about the Dalai Lama and a lot of what he said. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. It wasn't very, you know, I'm very against preachiness. And so I was just reading it. It was comforting me. And it was healing me, some of the words. And as I went through that, I said, look, you know, I just Googled him, and I looked, and he was coming to Santa Clara at the time. And I just said, hey, you know, I'll try to get tickets. And it was a 5,000-person venue. And so I ended up, I went online. I couldn't get them. They were, like, getting Seahawks tickets in Seattle. And I'm like, forget it. They did nothing. Then they said Berkeley was out. So then they said Santa Clara popped up. And he rarely comes to the U.S. And so I said, okay, in 3 weeks he's going to be here. So I said, okay. I got the tickets. And I was able to get 2 tickets. I was going to invite my brother. And that wasn't enough for me, right? And so, you know, the type A personality of, you know, a lot of business people. And I had that, and I have that. And I was like, I'm going to call the coordinator in Santa Clara. And I called her and I said, hey, I'd like to meet the Dalai Lama. And she said, are you serious? And I said, yeah. And she's like, this is not going to happen. So I said, okay. So I just let it go. And I kept believing that I wanted to, something inside me said, I need to meet him. I need to talk to him. And maybe, I think it was a week later, people call it coincidence. I don't call it coincidence, but a week later I get a generic email, from a hotel saying, use your points at this particular hotel. So I booked it, and, I ended up staying there. And in the lobby the night before, I'm sitting there and I'm having a drink, eating sushi with my brother and his friend. And I see this monk in the corner, and I walk toward the monk, and I then it was too crowded, and I walked back, and I decided, no, go meet with him. So I went to go meet with him, and I was in such a, I would call it suffering, mental, emotional suffering. I went up to him and I started talking to him, and then within that time frame, in about 40 minutes, he said, meet me here tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. And I went there in the morning, and I had a private meeting with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And it just opened my mind to a whole different world. And I was fortunate to meet with the Dalai Lama the following year and the year after. And just recently I met him this spring when he was at UC Santa Clara. So, yes, it turned. I said to myself, Sinclair. I was saying to myself, I'm not a monk, but I do believe. I'm a capitalist, a strong capitalist, but I do believe, like Adam Smith. I do believe that we must have these boundaries, and these boundaries. What John Haidt talks about, you know, he's a professor of business ethics, and a lot of these professors. Mm-hmm. It started me thinking about the common core values. And so I started going, but that's how I met you. To answer your question, that was the whole, people can say that was a coincidence.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a coincidence.
If it was a coincidence, yeah. It was a pretty remarkable coincidence. You mentioned, though, the individual suffering that you were going through. A lot of corporations and businesses go through a type of suffering as well, and you detail those in the book. You list them as the 4 diseases of corporate suffering. Deception, detraction, discrimination, doubt, these things that lead to a toxic environment and can really destroy a company. As we continue our conversation, I want to find out some of the prescriptions to overcome that. And we'll do that as we continue our conversation with Sean Vidge, the book Moral Fiber, Moral Fiber, Awakening Corporate Consciousness. More in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're talking with Sean Vidge. He is the author of a new book, Moral Fiber, Awakening Corporate Consciousness. May actually be one of the more important issues that is frequently overlooked in corporate America. We talked about how people and businesses, corporations, can suffer from a lack of moral fiber. Let's talk about some of the solutions. What is it that business leaders who have figured out moral fiber really value in their companies and in their workplaces?
Sure, Sinclair. I talk about it in the book a little bit, but I get into what the four D's, having lived in some of these toxic environments, in just the purpose of helping myself, I decided to categorize them. And what I witnessed is outcomes in some toxic environments. And you mentioned the deception, detraction, discrimination, and doubt. But where these come from, like what causes the deception? What causes these things? To figure out what the antidote is, we need to figure out the why, right? Mm-hmm. Like what's causing that? And so I got surgical and I started thinking and reading a lot on Buddhism and reading a lot on the Dalai Lama. I saw some patterns. I started trying to connect the dots a little bit and just started thinking with my background and what they call is the three poisons that live in each of us. And it's at the individual level. So anger, excessive greed, ignorance. Those are the elements that when mixed, that mixed cocktail can drive certain behaviors in certain organizations and cultures. So I've been in cultures, I'm sure a lot of people have been in these culture, work cultures where it's driven by fear or driven by anger. How do we resolve those things? What are the steps required? The funny thing is with anger, you know, so as you get surgical and you think of, you know, the anger, the way I kind of approach it, the way kind of I look at things is taking the complete opposite extreme and finding the dial. And so what I mean by that is, so anger, it would be compassion. You would literally use compassion to counter the anger. And it sounds kind of, you know, I don't know if that works, but, you know, every time I have really using compassion against anger, it's amazing what you can see. You'll hear a lot of people talking like about empathy at work, mm-hmm. and compassion. And I'm not talking about, you know, hugging people, right? I'm not talking about like giving hugs in the office. I'm talking about taking compassionate leadership, being open, being honest, being respectful, focusing on those core values to minimize this level of anger, greed, excessive greed, and ignorance. And wisdom, you know, the counter of ignorance would be wisdom. So those are the types of things that, you know, these are simple tools that one could use. I call it, you know, this the way I found myself, and I talked to leaders and I interviewed leaders, in fact, military leaders, in how they made business decisions. And one of the things I'll share with you, a simple tool, is with these emotions of anger, greed, and ignorance that drive these toxic behaviors, is a thing I just, for the simplicity of things, I call ACT.
Mm-hmm, right.
So accept the emotion, right? Accept the emotion. Sounds simple, but accept the emotion that you're feeling.
Right.
This requires self-awareness and introspection, right? And so accept the emotion. So if you're feeling angry, accept that emotion, be aware of it, then cloister that emotion. Because what ends up happening with a lot of these toxic feelings, they start building like locusts. They just replicate. I mean, we've been in those environments where we don't have our coffee, the coffee hasn't come, we're getting more angry. We start, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, we become ignorant. We're like, oh, you know, so, we start making assumptions.
So cloister it, isolate the emotion.
Correct. Cloister the emotion and then temper the emotion with the counter. So for anger, temper it with compassion. Right? With ignorance, temper it with wisdom. Open your mind. Be more self-aware. It's a simple thing. It's just a very simple thing. But using that, just practicing that. It's not just about knowing it. It's about practicing it.
And if it's greed, consider gratitude instead. Yeah.
Correct.
This is an important book. Sometimes it's not the analytical approach that is always the important thing. Sometimes it's the real backbone and the real strength of an organization is truly in its moral fiber. And you address this very clearly and in a very interesting way in the new book, Moral Fiber, Awakening Corporate Consciousness, Moral Fiber by Sean Vidge. Sean, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sinclair. I really appreciate it. Thank you.